Thank you. Thank you and good evening. I'd like to start first by thanking Mike Weiner for that gracious introduction and letting us know of the many things that Erie County does on behalf of the people of this community. Mike has been at the front lines of addressing issues related to the well-being of our citizens for almost decades now, first with the state, then with the county, and of course now as president of the United Way of Buffalo in Erie County. And I thank him for his efforts to create a stronger community. Thank you. I also want to thank our federal, state, and county officials and our leaders at the city, town, and village levels for being here tonight and for your service to the community. Working together, we are making a better community for all. Thank you. Thank you to Sergeant Toro for leading us through the Pledge of Allegiance and, of course, your service to this country. Thank you very much. And thank you to Reverend James Lewis for giving such a heartfelt invocation and for your work on behalf of the community, including the pastoral care that you do at ECMC. Thank you very much. Of course, I want to thank Mary Jean Jakubowski and the Buffalo and Erie County Public Library Board for being such gracious hosts in a building that, of course, is owned by the people of Erie County. Thank you for allowing us to be here tonight. And I want to thank everyone in attendance for coming out in this cold night and being with us. And, of course, everyone at home watching on Time Warner Cable News and Western New York Media, thank you for taking time out of your busy day to be here. Appreciate it. Now, before I begin, I want to recognize those Erie County employees who are serving in our military. These individuals exemplify the best of Erie County, and we thank them for all that they've done. For those currently overseas, including our Deputy Highway Superintendent, Bill Geary, we wish you a safe and speedy return home, and thank you for your service to the country. Tonight I stand before you for my second State of the County address. It was only a little more than 2 years ago that I gave my inaugural address, where I shared with you my values and beliefs and outlined what I hope to accomplish in the coming years. When I came into office, we were constantly told how dysfunctional government was, how it just couldn't do anything right, and how the only way to save it was to run it like a business. I reject that notion. Government exists to take on precisely those tasks that the private sector can't or won't. We unite to care for the penniless and provide a safety net for those who have fallen, maintain common amenities such as parks, libraries, and roads, and offer community and public safety services that provide value for the benefit of all. Government is not automatically the problem. It can be part of the solution. Now, this all sounds great, doesn't it? Well, it isn't enough just to say it, because results matter. Government without results is wasted effort, misplaced resources, and empty rhetoric. I am proud to say that here in Erie County, government is working and the results speak for themselves. First and foremost, county government is the front line of defense in protecting the public's health, safety, and well-being. Tonight, I want to talk to you about the various ways in which we as government fulfill this responsibility each and every day. Again, how government can be part of the solution to many of the problems that we face. While it is our nature to hope for the best, a responsible government prepares for the worst, and that's just what we've done. Erie County is now one of only a handful of counties across the state and the only one in Western New York to receive the National Weather Service's Storm Ready designation. Well, what does this mean? Well, Erie County now meets a stringent set of storm preparation standards. Receiving this designation last year is a testament to the work of the Erie County Department of Emergency Services, led by Commissioner Dan Nevritz Jr., and they've done a tremendous job to prepare, educate, and assist our communities in developing flexible and multifaceted plans in the event of severe weather, and in responding once that weather arrives. For better or worse, we're known nationwide for our chicken wings and our weather, so it's a good thing that we're now prepared for an emergency that's weather-related should it arise. The alternative is to be unprepared and just cross our fingers and hope that a storm doesn't hit us. I think it's quite evident from looking at our counterparts in Atlanta and Charlotte that we don't want to do that because that's not a good idea. Unlike our southern friends, when serious winter weather hit, we were storm ready. And as we all know, in January, we were hit by our first official blizzard since 1993. Now, we had been tracking the possibility of the storm for several days, and when it began to come to fruition, I mobilized our Emergency Operations Center in Cheektowaga immediately. But it just wasn't me. It was many people. And we checked our egos at the door and worked together as a team, local, state, and federal officials from the Emergency Operations Center. We were able to share information, coordinate response, and inform the public with everything they needed to know to stay safe. While there's been plenty of hype for previous storms of the century that never materialized, this one did. And I thank the public for heeding our warnings and staying off the roads, which allowed our first responders and public works officials to quickly clear the roads and get us back to normalcy. Now, two things told me that we handled the storm very well. First, thankfully, there was no loss of life as there had been in previous storms. And secondly, I was paid a compliment by a member of the legislature majority. Now, I think that's a good thing because it shows government working together. So thank you, Legislator Hardwick, for those kind words in the recent B edition. Now, it doesn't mean we have a bad relationship. In effect, we actually have a very good relationship, I believe, right now between the executive and the legislature. But I think it's important that we say that when things are good, we compliment each other. And I appreciate that compliment, and I appreciate the work of the legislators during the storm as well. Because what was a dangerous and life-threatening emergency turned out just to be another couple of days in January in Buffalo, thanks to the incredible response of our emergency services, public works, health, and highway departments, and the numerous levels of law enforcement personnel that were involved, especially the Erie County Sheriff's Office. These individuals spent many hours in terrible conditions, risking themselves to ensure the public was protected. I would like to ask all those individuals in the audience right now to rise so we can all thank you for the work that you did during the blizzard and the work that you do every day protecting the people of Erie County. Please rise. We saw with the blizzard that the key to a successful response was being prepared before there's an emergency. Just like we prepared for a weather emergency, we are likewise preparing in the event of a public health emergency. Now, the National Centers for Disease Control and Prevention rate communities on an annual basis based on their ability to respond to a public health emergency, including their access to an inventory that's called the Strategic National Stockpile of antibiotics, vaccines, chemical antidotes, antitoxins, and other critical medical equipment and supplies. When I came into office as county executive, Erie County was failing. In fact, in 2011, the county's average score was 65%. You didn't hear about it because nobody wants to say when they're failing. This was absolutely unacceptable. I'm proud to say that after a tremendous amount of hard work, we were re-rated in 2013 with a score of 95%. In less than 2 years, we went from an F to an A+. And if a need arises, we are now prepared to respond. We owe our thanks to the Departments of Health, Emergency Services, and Public Works for working to ensure the basic needs of our community are met to protect all of our residents. Please join me in thanking them for their efforts. Now, in addition to protecting against the possibility of a weather or public health-related disaster, last year we were called upon to protect this community from a potential financial disaster. Now, we all remember the October surprise storm of 2006. Nearly 7 years after the storm snows had melted and the last tree limbs were cleaned up, we were still dealing with the storm's after effects. Because in February of 2013, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Office of Inspector General blindsided us when it issued an audit claiming that Erie County should repay $48.5 million in storm-related cleanup costs. $48.5 million is an incredible sum of money. That's the same amount of money that we could pay to run our parks for 10 years in a row. Having to pay that back would have been devastating. It would have nearly drained the county's fund balance, likely resulted in our credit ratings being downgraded by the rating agencies. Furthermore, as a result of that, the control board in all likelihood would have entered a control period again, something I was not going to allow to happen. Immediately, we went to work refuting the audit and proving it included erroneous understandings of the law, incomplete information, and incorrect findings. This past June, I joined Senator Charles Schumer and FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate in the Senator's Washington, D.C. office to discuss the audit and review the findings. The meeting provided me the opportunity to present to Administrator Fugate the numerous reasons why Erie County should not be held liable for recoupment of the funds used during the cleanup. Thankfully, at the end of August, FEMA came to the same conclusion that both Senator Schumer and I did, and rejected nearly the entirety of the flawed audit's findings. In all, FEMA would only seek about $700,000 of funding be returned, a little more than 1% of the possible $48.5 million they originally were recommended. Now nearly a decade later, thanks to the hard work of many individuals, including Senator Schumer, we can all put the disaster finally behind us. Thank you for everyone who played a part in making that happen. I appreciate it. As a public official and the former comptroller, I am ever mindful of the need to be a careful steward of the county's finances, and I constantly work to ensure that residents are getting fair, transparent, and honest budgeting. The community has many needs, but we also understand that the taxpayers of our community do not give us a blank check. I believe that in order for our social contract to survive, we need to strike the right balance between what the government takes and what the people can afford to give, and we work on that balance every day. This is a challenge, to say the least. As every Erie County executive before me has lamented, approximately 90% of our $1.4 billion budget is attributed to state and federal mandates, programs, services, and other requirements that we have little control over. But the public doesn't want excuses. They want solutions. A budget should be just more than dollars and cents on a bunch of spreadsheets. It should be common sense solutions to address the needs of our constituents and promote positive change for the entire community, whether it be used as an economic engine to spur job growth, a health and human services tool to address poverty and health care needs of our citizens, or the mechanisms to increase the quality of life of our residents. And that's exactly what we've done during the last 2 years. This administration has risen to the challenge and found that balance. We've done it by making targeted spending reductions across county government where we can, sometimes even holding back on approved spending when we didn't actually have the money to pay for it. And in the end, we were able to provide the programs and services the people have mandated without raising taxes. In fact, we've been so conscious of our spending that we expect to see a modest budget surplus again for 2013. Now, this was not an easy task, and this will not always be the case, but I'm glad we were able to do it during my first 2 years as executive. I look forward to working with the new majority in the legislature later this year and beyond as we begin to craft budgets that are fiscally sound and meet the many needs of our community, and I look forward to doing that later this year. I hope you do as well. I think that guy on the screen likes fiscally sound budgets as well. Now, I believe the average county homeowner would be surprised to hear that they actually pay less in real property taxes to Erie County in 2014 than they did in 1990. How is that possible, you say? Well, Erie County isn't the only government that imposes a real property tax, not by a long shot. In all, Erie County has 1,044 special taxing districts. That's 1,044 governments, all of which have the authority to levy property taxes. And we're not just talking about towns, villages, and cities, and of course, Erie County. These special taxing districts include lighting districts, fire districts, drainage districts, sewer districts, garbage districts, even insect control districts, and of course, school districts. We have so many special districts in Erie County that Governor Cuomo specifically noted in his State of the State address and his recent budget message, once again this week, that Erie County is the poster child of government proliferation when it comes to special taxing districts and how we must reduce the number of districts we have in our community. Now, the governor also said that there are so many special taxing districts in New York that there's even one district just to count all the other districts. I think he was joking, but this being New York, it may have been true for all you know. 1,044 taxing districts out of 10,500 statewide. Just think about that for a second. Erie County has 10% of the governments in New York State. Do we have 10% of the population of New York State? No. Do we have 10% of the tax base of New York State? Heck no, not even close. So I ask, why do we have 10% of the governments? Although Erie County has little to no control over any of these little governments, we can play a part in helping to reduce the cost and the tax burden that they place on the people of our community by developing cooperative agreements that cut the costs and eliminate duplicative services. For example, just this past September, we hammered out a new snowplowing agreement with our towns and villages. Erie County has more than 2,400 lane miles of roads. That's more than the states of Rhode Island, Delaware, and Hawaii. And when it snows, we simply don't have the resources to plow every lane mile. So we contract with 32 municipalities to plow these roads for us, often on roads they're going to plow as part of their villages and towns. You saw the results with the last blizzard. Cooperating with municipalities saves time, it saves gas, it saves salt, and all of that, in the end, saves money. I want to commend my partners in the Association of Erie County Governments for reaching an equitable snowplowing agreement that keeps costs down and ensures our roads are plowed and safe. Thank you. I appreciate it. We're also moving forward with a new and exciting initiative to protect and revitalize our communities across Erie County and reduce the blight that drains our community resources. As you may remember, last year, in a display of intermunicipal cooperation like this community had never seen before, we came together as one county to establish one of New York State's first land banks. We were rewarded by being selected through a statewide competitive process as one of only five communities to be selected in the first round of competition. And this project took a tremendous leap forward when Erie County and the Erie County Land Bank was awarded $2 million in funds by New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, out of more than $12 million in grant funding that he had set aside for land banks. Because of this award, we've been able to accelerate our efforts to fight blight across the county. Right now, we're rehabilitating our first property in our community, getting it back into productive use so it's back onto the tax rolls. This is a perfect example of what happens when we work as one instead of trying to go it alone. We win as a region. These are just some of the most recent examples of cooperative agreements we've entered into to save you money. But Erie County can't do it alone. That's why I'm excited to hear that the state will now be championing this cause by creating incentives for municipalities to reduce costs through shared services and help fund studies to consolidate and eliminate these duplicative levels of government. I worked as comptroller with then-Attorney General Andrew Cuomo on the unnecessary myriad of local assessing units that exist in Erie County, half as many in Erie County as there exist in the entire state of California. And I will work with now Governor Cuomo on not only reducing the number of special taxing districts countywide, but also preventing new ones from being established. And I hope you will join the governor and I in this endeavor. Another way we are protecting our communities is by dramatically increasing the amount we have invested in our aging infrastructure. In 2013, we invested a total of $36 million on dozens of projects across Erie County. Included in this investment are a few projects that seemed like they'd never get done, but are now because of intermunicipal cooperation. The best example of that is Kenmore Avenue. Despite being one of the most heavily traveled roads in Erie County, Kenmore Avenue was considered to be among one of the worst roads in our region. The difficulty in getting this particular road done was that the county owns and maintains the westbound lane, while the city of Buffalo owns and maintains the eastbound lane. For many years, it had basically sat in disrepair. Last summer, working with Mayor Brown, we were able to get through the roadblock, and the pun isn't intended, by developing a plan to repave the road from Main Street to Elmwood Avenue by the summer of 2015. Last year, the county did its 1 mile. This upcoming year, the city of Buffalo will be doing its 1 mile, and then we're doing jointly the final mile with assistance from the federal and state government. This is exactly the type of cooperative and forward-thinking agreement the public expects from its government but rarely sees. I want to thank Mayor Byron Brown, City Streets Commissioner Steve Stepniak, and County Public Works Commissioner John Lofredo for rolling up their sleeves, finding a way to do so, and if you may indulge me, pave a new way for the future. Thank you. While we cannot get to every road that we need that needs repair as soon as possible, I am moving forward to fix a number of roads that have been problems for many years. In 2014, we'll be investing at least $23 million on our roads and bridges in all areas of the county. Included in this is funding to repair Goodrich Road in Clarence and Soles Road in Hamburg, which were right behind Kenmore Avenue as being two of the worst roads in all of Erie County. And we're going to do more as best as we can. We know it's been a bad winter, and I'm talking to our Commissioner of Public Works. We're going to do as much as we can, and I thank them for the work that they've done this year to keep the streets plowed and to fix the potholes as soon as possible. Thank you. In line with safeguarding the infrastructure of our communities and the safety of our residents is also protecting our natural resources and public lands. And when we think about economic drivers in Erie County, often we forget about the local agricultural industry. Farms provide jobs, use less in municipal services than they pay in taxes, maintain wildlife habitat, highlight our cultural heritage, and offer fresh local food to the citizens of our community. However, sprawling development is pushed out further from Buffalo, threatening the amount of farmland that exists. Last year, I announced the completion of a new agricultural and farmland protection plan. This plan was the culmination of more than 20 months' work begun by my predecessor and only possible through the incredible work and input of the local agricultural community. I want to take some time to thank the members of the Farmland Protection Board and everyone else involved in this process for working very hard to create a stronger tomorrow for our agricultural community. Thank you very much. In addition to protecting our farmland, we have continued in our duty to be careful stewards of the land to ensure our expansive parklands and public spaces are preserved for future generations. Now, 2013 was a very busy year for our park system, and I've kept my promise to continually improve them to ensure our families have a safe and fun place to enjoy all year long. The most significant improvements happened at Chestnut Ridge Park, which included redesigning and repaving the main parking lot and tennis courts, upgrading accessibility and making the casino disability compliant, rebuilding a number of shelters, installing new lighting and electricity to all the main buildings, and ensuring when we needed it, snow was on the ground so people could enjoy Winterfest. Well, I asked. I prayed a little, but it happened. At Como Lake Park, we stabilized the Rich Marino gazebo and several other shelters which were in danger of collapse. At Elma Meadows Park, we rebuilt the main shelters, and at the golf course, we repaired significant damage drainage issues and rebuilt every bunker. We also switched the nines on the golf course to restore it to its original routing. Now, this may not seem like much, but by doing this, we have reduced the amount of time it takes to play rounds, increasing play and the amount of rounds, generating more revenue for the county, and making golfers happier by getting off the golf course earlier. At least I can make them happier as it pertains to the length of their rounds. I really can't do anything for their scores. Now, my speech says I'm supposed to pause for a groan here, and I see that that was correct. Additionally, this year, just like many of my jokes in the speech, our parks went to the dogs. The award-winning Black Rock Canal Park continued its resurgence and officially opened last May. As part of this park, we have built the county's first dog park, and through a partnership with the Sheriff's Office, added a canine memorial honoring past and current dogs that have served in the Sheriff's Office and other law enforcement capabilities. And just this past winter, following the success of the dog park at Black Rock Canal Park, we opened the second dog park at Ellicott Creek Park. I want to thank again the Black Rock Canal Park steering community and the Friends of Ellicott for all your hard work on behalf of the people and four-legged people of our community and the dog lovers of our community in making these dog parks happen. Thank you very much. I also think it's government's responsibility to help protect the American dream. One of the best ways we can ensure a better future for our citizens is by strengthening our local economy. Government can help create the right economic climate conducive to job creation. Now, we all know about the economic turnaround in our region. All you have to do is look at the numerous construction sites across the county to see the more than $2 billion being invested in our region. Now, these investments did not happen on their own. Government, particularly the state and county, and other local municipalities like the City of Buffalo, played a strong role in making them happen. Millions of dollars were invested into Canalside by New York State and Erie County. Some people criticized the project. They just said we're throwing money into a big ditch. But just like how Governor DeWitt Clinton's original ditch, the Erie Canal, panned out for our community, this public project is now leading to additional private investment and an economic boost that otherwise would not have happened. Already we've seen the adaptive reuse of the Benderson development of the Donovan Building and by Phillips Lytle, and now the $170 million Harbor Center project by Kim and Terry Pagula. This is why you invest money in these projects, so the private sector will invest back. We're starting to reap the bounty of on our return, and I want to thank everyone who played a role in making this happen. Now, the last two projects I talked about, each of those projects also benefited from strategic tax incentives approved by the Erie County Industrial Development Agency. As I've said in the past, we shouldn't be supporting every project with tax breaks, just like the IDAs did when the Old Boys Network gave tax breaks to every project, regardless of merit. Every time ECIDA considers a project, I ask exactly how will the taxpayers benefit from their investment. The return on their investment that I demand is a legally binding commitment to retain and create jobs. Economic development must mean job development. And that's exactly what we are doing. Just in 2013 alone, ECIDA provided financial incentives to 28 companies of every size located across Erie County. More importantly, there's a tangible return on the taxpayers' investments into these projects. Specifically, more than $658 million in additional capital investment in our community, the retention of more than 3,800 existing jobs, and the creation of nearly 1,000 new jobs. Additionally, I'm proud to say at the same time we were able to create all those jobs, the ECIDA was the first local IDA to approve a local labor policy to ensure construction work associated with all the development we're seeing on around this community being incentivized by the ECIDA goes to our own Western New York labor force. The ECIDA is also the first local IDA to establish a termination and recapture policy to claw back tax dollars from applicants who violate their basic terms of contract with the IDA by not creating the jobs they promised. This will ensure a whole new level of accountability in the system and that the people are getting the best bang for their buck with the development that the ECIDA participates in. But the job is not done yet. The ECIDA cannot be the only local industrial development agency to implement such a recapture policy. In order to protect the public's investment, each of the town-level IDAs must institute a similar policy. Today, I am calling on all of their board of directors to do so. The time has come to protect the taxpayers by holding all companies accountable if they receive a tax break, if they do not, in the end, create the jobs that they say they're going to. Additionally, the time has come to establish real pay equity between the sexes. Statistics show that women earn only 77% of the salary as men do for the same job. This is discrimination in its most basic form, and I demand that Erie County lead by example. That's why I'm calling on the Erie County Industrial Development Agency and all town-level IDAs to pass a new policy requiring all applicants to prove they pay their female employees the same as males in similar positions. If you want a tax break from our community, you will have to prove to the people you treat your female employees the same as your male employees, plain and simple. Please join me in supporting such an effort and sending the message that Erie County does not tolerate discrimination against women, that we will not tolerate pay inequity. Now, reforming IDAs is only part of our effort to strengthen our regional economy. Last June, I announced my administration's economic plan, Initiatives for a Smart Economy. This plan represents a comprehensive and innovative approach to economic development that effectively addresses our region's challenges while shaping a stronger future. In formulating this plan, we knew it did not make sense to start from scratch. Instead, we built upon the framework and direction presented by the Western New York Regional Economic Development Council and Governor Andrew Cuomo's Billion for Budget Plan. As a result, we've seen tremendous progress already been made. Of the original 64 initiatives, we've begun more than 40, with some of them already completed and many more successes soon to be announced. These include from establishing a one-stop shop for economic development in Erie County in the city of Buffalo, to opening up the development of the old Bethlehem Steel site, to creating a new task force to find ways to adequately fund Visit Buffalo Niagara, and to building upon our successes of attracting Canadian businesses to this side of the Niagara River. Each one of these initiatives represents just one piece of the puzzle or a gear in the overall machine that is our economy, and we're beginning to see the fruits of our labor. Since January of 2012, Erie County's unemployment rate has dropped from 8.9% to 6.4%. While this is definitely great news, percentages mean nothing if real jobs have not been created. That's why the fact is during the same period, 12,300 people are employed today that were not employed as of January 2012. That is the real success story, and I think that deserves a commendation from everyone. If you ask those 12,300 people and their families if they're better off today than they were in January of 2012, I believe they overwhelmingly would say yes. Now, there's plenty of credit to go around, but I want to especially thank Governor Andrew Cuomo for his dedication to our community. No governor in modern times has focused as much attention and state money to Erie County as Governor Cuomo has. He understands there's a lot more to New York State than just New York City. After decades of neglect, because of his investment and our unified economic development efforts, our community is getting stronger every day. In fact, Buffalo and Erie County's renaissance is a national success story and one that we can all be proud of. So to everyone, Governor Cuomo, each and every individual who's played a role in this from the Western New York Regional Economic Development Council on down, thank you for all that you do on behalf of the community. Your work is bearing the fruits. Thank you. Now, when we talk about the turnaround of our local economy, we have to remember that not everyone has seen better days. Just as the state is only as strong as its weakest region, the county is only as strong as the most vulnerable among us. As a county government, the role we play and responsibility I take most seriously is our duty to protect the most vulnerable citizens of our society. It is government's duty to be considered with the welfare of all citizens we represent, not just taxpayers. Sometimes that means our oldest adults relying on government services like home-delivered meals. Although many of us take for granted a hot meal every day, for some, it's not a given. When the federal sequestration threatened funding for our elderly nutrition services, at a time when demand for home-delivered meals was on the rise, we understood that this program was a lifeline for those who need it. So we made our dollars stretch further by streamlining and centralizing the county's portion of the program and restructuring our arrangement with Meals on Wheels of Western New York, which resulted in considerable savings. Now, what did this mean? This allowed us to purchase approximately 40,000 more meals on an annual basis through all of the nutrition programs that we have in Erie County. It also allowed us to set aside money for ethnic meals and reduce the suggested voluntary contribution for meals served at our local senior centers. Please join me in thanking the Department of Senior Services and Meals on Wheels of Western New York for making this happen. You are making lives better. Now, in addition to protecting our seniors, government has a responsibility to protect our children. The worst days of my administration have been when I learned about the death of a child. The vast majority of these tragedies you never hear about and are due to unsafe sleeping habits. Already this year alone, 6 infants have died needlessly because of co-sleeping with a parent or being placed in an unsafe sleeping environment. Now, other children have died, but violently, and at the hands of a family member or someone close to their family. You've probably heard of these media reports, but maybe not all of them. In fact, since January of 2012, 6 children have been killed countywide. Roderick Manny Geiger III was slashed to death by his mentally ill grandmother. Austin Smith was beaten to death by his mother's boyfriend. Abdi Fada Muhammad was brutally beaten to death by his stepfather. Gage Seneca was beaten to death by his mother's boyfriend. The boyfriend of the mother of Ian Brooks is suspected to having caused his death. And Mayuana Smith was recently murdered, though no arrest was made in this case. 6 young children struck down in what should have been the happiest times of their lives. 6 children murdered by people who should have been there to nurture them, to mentor them, to protect them. Some advised me not to speak of their deaths during this address, to hide from it as if it didn't happen. But I cannot. We must learn from their deaths and try to create a better, safer society for everyone. In each case, as county executive, I demanded to know if there was any prior involvement with the families, and if so, anything that we could have done better. After conducting a top-to-bottom assessment, we concluded that change was necessary. Caseworkers who did an inadequate job were fired. Their supervisors were suspended. We reassigned the head of Children's Protective Services, but we did not stop there. I demanded much more so we can prevent these types of tragedies in the future. So we added more caseworkers and strengthened the supervisory support structure for them. But we did not stop there. We are placing county social workers and mental health providers in all Buffalo public schools for the first time ever. But we didn't stop there. We are now placing caseworkers at the hospitals that do the most intake of children in need, Children's Hospital and Sisters Hospitals. And I want to thank Kaleida and Catholic Health Systems for allowing us to do that. Thank you very much. We didn't stop there. We're doing even more because we're also improving relationships with the Buffalo Police Department and Central Police Services to train our Child Protective Service workers in personal safety and forensic interviewing techniques. These changes are making a difference. A little less than 2 weeks ago, the New York State Office of Children and Family Services, after doing a comprehensive review of CPS, issued a report noting the improvements we have implemented in CPS and that CPS is headed in a positive direction. Now, while this is a start, there's only so much that we can do locally because there are systemic issues at the state level that need to be addressed to truly reform Child Protective Services. Right now, we have a system that is stacked against CPS workers, which means it's stacked against children. Pending legislation in the state Senate that is no doubt well-intentioned actually makes it harder for CPS workers to do their job. That's why I am developing my own proposal, which will get to the root of the problem CPS workers face in effectively doing their jobs. It is absolutely outrageous that CPS workers trying to protect innocent children do not have access to either police or vital medical records. Did you know that? When responding to a call, they have no ability to determine if someone in that household has a criminal background. Instead, they have to wait weeks while navigating bureaucratic red tape to get such information. And hopefully by the time they get it, it's not too late. My proposal would grant the Commissioner of Social Services access to the New York Statewide Police Information Network and authority to subpoena other vital records immediately, giving caseworkers the information they need on the criminal past of any adult in the household. Additionally, My proposal will seek to strengthen CPS's ability to determine neglect by making two incidences of excessive corporal punishment of a child in an 18-month period a presumption of neglect. It currently isn't the case, and it needs to be. We are also seeking to establish a new felony crime of endangering the welfare of a child in certain aggravated circumstances. We've seen cases in the past that should be a felony, but under current law, it's only a misdemeanor. The time has changed. We need to change the law. We need to make it a felony and need to do it because the current law is insufficient. Furthermore, our proposal will seek to have all calls made to the state registry recorded. They're not. And make those audio records available to CPS workers on a real-time basis. Lastly, we propose to make it a felony for making a false report of child abuse. Now, we do not want to discourage families and friends and others from reported suspected abuse. Unfortunately, some people make false claims maliciously for their own personal benefit, repeatedly, often as part of some custody dispute or another family matter. We hear from our caseworkers all the time about how challenging it is for them to manage their caseloads without having to waste their valuable time investigating repeated false reports. CPS caseworkers should be focused upon families in need, children in need and in real danger, not responding to what are often malicious false reports of people just trying to get back at someone else. It's time to change the law. While not the only changes I propose to make, these will go a long way in allowing Erie County to better react to child abuse and neglect. But I'm not satisfied with being reactive. The children of Erie County deserve a government that is proactively stopping abuse and neglect. And the best opportunity we have to stop child abuse before it happens is to address the issue of poverty. In 1964, President Lyndon Baines Johnson said, "Unfortunately, many Americans live on the outskirts of hope, some because of their poverty and some because of their color, and all too many because of both. Our task is to help replace their despair with opportunity." President Johnson went on to note, "It will not be a short or easy struggle. No single weapon or strategy will suffice, but we shall not rest until that war is won. The richest nation on earth can afford to win it. We cannot afford to lose it." Now, it's hard to believe it's been 50 years since President Johnson launched his war on poverty. Many of you here today were just kids or, like me, a twinkle in my mother's eye. But in the years since LBJ created the war on poverty, his programs have lifted millions upon millions of people out of desperate situations. Unfortunately, we lost the focus we once had. While Erie County's unemployment rate and levels of poverty are better than the state and national averages, not everyone is benefiting from our resurgent economy. In fact, many at the lowest rung of the economic ladder are being left behind, and income inequality is now putting at risk the middle class. Poverty plays a profound role in the educational challenges in a city where nearly one in two students does not graduate high school on time. Poverty also contributes to high rates of adult illiteracy, poor health, criminal activity, homelessness, unemployment, and dependency on limited government resources. Poverty hurts us all, imposing high costs not just on those who are suffering it, but on government, business, and neighborhoods. Poverty is also widespread. While the levels of poverty are at most extreme in our urban areas, the suburbs and rural areas in Erie County now contain more people in total living in poverty than in the urban areas. There is hope, though. We are beginning to see a convergence of innovative anti-poverty programs in our region, including a number of programs and initiatives where Erie County government is leading way in forging strong partnerships. Now, we know that a person cannot advance themselves if they're suffering from a lack of high-quality health care. Recently, the county's Medicaid Inspector General, Mike Zucala, conducted a first-of-its-kind analysis of Medicaid usage in Erie County. The report revealed that nearly one-quarter of all Erie County residents receive Medicaid, which includes 3 out of 10 children. Worse yet, the number of enrollees is increasing at an average rate of more than 4% per year. Think about that for a moment. Nearly 1 in 4 residents in Erie County has Medicaid as his or her primary insurance coverage. And that does not include just those people who are unemployed, but many recipients who have jobs that work full-time and still cannot make ends meet. For example, under new guidelines, in a one-income household, the head of a family of 4 still qualifies for Medicaid if he or she makes $15 per hour full-time year-round. That's nearly double the minimum wage in New York State, yet they're still not able to get by without the help from others. And while many Medicaid enrollees do live in the city of Buffalo, a growing number of enrollees live in our suburban towns and especially in our rural village centers. Many of these individuals have no primary care doctor and often seek medical assistance when it's too late. As we work to move our county's economy forward, we cannot leave behind the health and well-being of those on the lowest rungs of the economic ladder. I am proud to say we are only weeks away from the opening of the Erie County Health Mall, a new primary care, dental, and mental health clinic located at the former Matt Gajewski Center on Buffalo's east side, right near the Cheektowaga border. Erie County's residents, whose only option may have been to visit a costly ER, or worse yet, not even see a doctor, will now have access to a one-stop shop for quality and affordable health care. The investment we make today on this clinic will pay huge dividends in our future by improving our community's health while reducing the long-term health care costs associated with Medicaid. And that will benefit all of us, the entire community. And I want to thank our partners in making this happen. I greatly appreciate it. In the first week of April, the doors will be open. In order to make the next great improvement in our social safety network, we must leap ahead of the largely reactive programs to get ahead of the problems before they come into Erie County's front door with desperate needs. We know the greatest tool to take someone out of poverty is to educate them. But for too long, the Buffalo Public School System was failing in this basic task. Too many of our greatest assets, our children, are dropping out and becoming a drain on the greater community. Now, we've made a major breakthrough to end this cycle of failure by partnering with Catholic Charities, Buffalo Public Schools, and the Say Yes program. This partnership features a significant expansion of social work, mental health services, and clinics into Buffalo Public School buildings so the students in need for the services can easily access them in a safe environment, his or her own schools. The new role will strengthen the Erie County Department of Social Services' ability to protect and serve at-risk youth. Our task is to see that family and community concerns do not prevent students from graduating and taking advantage of those wonderful Say Yes scholarships. And working together, we will ensure that happens. Thank you for all your participation. To lift families out of poverty, we must also focus on workforce development to ensure we are training our citizens for the jobs that actually exist today. I've led the call to address the workforce development needs of our community. We are collaborating with our partners in the Buffalo Niagara Partnership, ECC, the Workforce Development Consortium, the Buffalo and Erie County Workforce Investment Board, and New York State to effectively train our residents for the careers of today and tomorrow. For example, New York State just recently announced the next step towards taking the creation of the Advanced Manufacturing Training Center in our community, and Erie County and ECC will play a key role in making that happen. We do this because we know if we can educate our population for the jobs that exist today, we can reduce overall poverty in our community now. Unfortunately, poverty in Western New York has not yet received the sustained attention it deserves, and I believe now is the time to create a united regional effort to address it. An effective anti-poverty strategy requires more than just creating good-paying jobs. It requires economic development efforts and human service programs working hand in hand. While economic growth will create the conditions necessary to lift many out of poverty, human service initiatives are needed to allow disadvantaged citizens to take advantage of those opportunities. In support of these efforts, my administration is working on a new Health and Human Services Plan, Initiatives for a Stronger Community, as a counterpart to our Economic Development Plan, Initiatives for a Smart Economy. As we develop this plan, we know we must strengthen our fragile families. Often, families come through our doors numerous times for a variety of reasons, maybe needing assistance to put food on the table or to heat their home, or in need of child care subsidy and so that the parents can go to work and just put regular food on the table. They may even need us to help with child support from an absent parent. Other times, people come through our doors for the wrong reasons, because they got in trouble, such as being on probation. Whatever the reason someone may come through our front door, our goal will always be for them able to exit it ready, willing, and able to take care of themselves and their family. If we fail at this task, our community will not and cannot be as strong as it should be. We must provide better and more choices for our young people. We must create a sense of hope that if they work hard and play by the rules, the sky is the limit. One of the most important things we can do is help our parents make good choices for themselves and their children. Our county has seen too many children's lives taken or destroyed due to drug abuse, untreated mental illness, and family violence. Too many single mothers in our community have chosen new partners who abuse drugs and are abusive to them and their children. We will be putting forward an initiative to inform parents about family violence, safe sleeping, stress management, and the community resources available to them so they do not have to continue to live in those conditions. Additionally, many seniors who have worked hard their entire lives now find themselves on limited retirement incomes and on the edge of poverty. And too often, our seniors are not aware of the services and benefits that can help them make ends meet. As such, throughout 2014, we will be working to raise awareness of these benefits and assisting our seniors to get the help they need, especially as it pertains to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which most of you all know is food stamps. Many other residents are only one health event away from poverty. A stroke, heart attack, or even a fall can result in costly out-of-pocket expenses. In worst-case scenarios, family members may have to choose between caring for their parents and having a job. While not always preventable, we know that communities can reduce these kinds of health care events by investing in good health promotion efforts that focus on preventing falls and controlling the chronic diseases that often led to a crucial health events, and Erie County will take the lead in doing so. There are also many anti-poverty programs funded by the federal government which are being severely underutilized in our community. Nationwide, about 1 in 5 people eligible for food stamps do not apply for them, and about 1 in 5 also do not claim the earned income tax credit. Now, why should you matter about this? Because we can assume then that tens of thousands of Erie County residents are not taking into account the food stamps or the earned income tax credit they could receive. This matters for all of us because not only will it help our local families, it will help our local economy. If we can increase the participation rates for these programs, which do not impact local taxes, millions upon millions of dollars more can be injected into our local economy. Erie County government needs to proactively tackle these challenges and aggressively pursue opportunities to improve the quality of life for all our citizens. And I guarantee we will. As Supreme Court Justice William Brennan noted 44 years ago, anti-poverty programs exist so we, and I quote, can bring within the reach of the poor the same opportunities that are available to others to participate meaningfully in the life of the community. We can give our citizens living in poverty the tools they need to carve out a brighter future. We can give them the hope for a better tomorrow, not only for themselves, but for their children, and as a result, strengthen our entire community. While we may never eliminate all poverty in our community, we should never let the fear of failure stop us from trying. As long as a significant portion of our community lives in poverty, we are all poorer for it. It is our responsibility to protect those who cannot protect themselves and to help lift those who cannot do it on their own. We hear so much from elected officials that they're protecting taxpayers. But shouldn't we be coming together as a community to also protect those in need like our seniors and our children? Shouldn't we be protecting people? We must work together to address the roots of poverty. We cannot simply stand by and say it's someone else's problem to fix. As I have discussed with you tonight, government is not automatically the problem. It can be part of a solution. If we are to succeed in reducing poverty and give each and every one of our residents the opportunity to live the American dream, as was the case in generations past, government must be part of the solution. We are seeing it today with our economy. 10 years ago, heck, 2 years ago, not many people could have dreamed of the successes we are seeing in our community, successes that only materialized because government worked hand-in-hand with our partners in all sectors of the community. By putting aside our old parochial ways to instead work together, we are witnessing a renaissance. But this renaissance will be a Pyrrhic victory if many members of our community are left behind. While it won't be easy, we must work together to address the problems of poverty and income inequality in our region. And I know we can do it. When I sat inside the Emergency Operations Center during the blizzard, I looked around the table and saw representatives from state and county agencies while we participated in conference calls with the national government and local governmental leaders. We were not Democrats or Republicans. We were a community united to respond to the worst that Mother Nature could throw at us. And we prevailed because everyone, from those in that room to those out in the field to the citizens in our community, believed in each other and worked together. That is the spirit of Buffalonians, those who call the Niagara Frontier home. We are not afraid to take on a tough task, and we will succeed if we work as one. So let's roll up our sleeves and use that same can-do spirit to attack the problem of poverty. It won't be easy, but that's why government is here. To lead when others cannot or will not. Today, I promise you that Erie County government will lead, will be part of the solution, and the results will continue to speak for themselves. Thank you, everyone.